Full Service Radio is proudly supported and hosted by Simplecast, the easiest way for a podcast creator to publish and distribute audio on the internet. For more information, visit simplecast.com.
You're tuned in to Full Service Radio.
Full Service Radio.
Full Service.
Full Service.
Full Service.
Full Service Radio.
You're listening to the DC Public Library on Full Service Radio, broadcasting live from the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. This episode is a part of the From the Studio, where we showcase the content that has been created or produced by library patrons at the Studio Lab Express, which is housed at the Shepherd Park Library, Juanita E. Thornton Shepherd Park Library. There are no special guests today, just my regular colleagues. Do you guys want to introduce yourself? Say your names and who you are.
I'm Casey Danielson, library associate up at the Studio Lab at Shepherd Park Library.
Yeah, and I'm Will Reed, also a library associate up at the Studio Lab.
And it's also an awesome and exciting day. You know why? Special?
Why is it special?
Yeah, why?
Because it's UGG season. I can wear my UGGs.
Oh, it's fall.
It's fall, yes, yeah. Yes, yes.
Pumpkin spice latte flavored shoes.
Yes. Yeah. Anyway. So we have not had a discussion on air in probably over a year now.
Has it been that long since the three of us have been on together?
Yeah, I think it's been about a year. Mm. So I thought it would be a great idea to discuss the Studio Lab and, you know, again, to kind of go through thoroughly and share with our listeners what the Studio Lab is, how it operates, and how it can help upcoming or anybody who just wants to play around in filmmaking or photography, because that's what the Studio Lab is there for.
Definitely.
Yeah.
So before we get started, I thought it'd be a good idea to kind of, again, go deeper into who you are, dig into your psyches a little bit. And
you don't want to do that.
Okay. Okay, so
we're filmmakers, you don't want to do that.
So let's talk a bit about what we are working on and, you know, what we've learned this summer or in the past year since we've had a chance to. So people can kind of get to know who we are and, you know, what we do. Who wants to go first?
I can go first because we're doing some shooting this week. One of our coworkers, Gervais, has been coming in to learn filmmaking and has made a short film about school and how students, from the point of view of the students, have students hate going to school. But as he was coming in and learning how to import video, how to edit, how to get things sequenced and stuff, he kind of revealed that he had a couple scripts that were halfway written, and these are all horror movie scripts. And since I love that kind of stuff and I've been working on that kind of stuff myself but haven't actually executed anything good, we decided to mess around and work on something together. So this is all in the vein of people being able to shoot stuff on their cameras and stuff like that. And Steven Soderbergh did that movie, what was it, Psycho? Insane. Which was all shot on iPhone 7. We've already talked before about that movie Tangerine, which was shot on iPhone 5 at Cannes like a few years ago. So anyway, the challenge is to just use a smartphone or smart devices to shoot it. And then
is that what he's using?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And I don't think he would be mad if I said he has sent me a bunch of his shots, his ideas about stuff, and I kind of responded with, here's all the things that you could improve about those without trying to be a jerk, which is difficult. But then, I sort of just stepped in as technical dude But still let him do all the story stuff. So these are horror movies. One of them's mine, one of them's his, and one of them's another guy's that he's going to stitch together into an anthology type of thing. So, yeah, that's what we're working on. And all of the actors are students at Duke Ellington High School. Mm. And we're shooting, the one we're shooting is called Bully, which is about a bully in high school. And it's being shot in the high school. With high school students as actors, and it's a little bit challenging because they're so likely to just start joking around and laughing in the middle of a take and stuff like that. I forgot how different it was with all those, with being young, you know. So it's hard to kind of rein people in. Yeah, but I think it's cool to work with younger people, so I'm just excited about that. How about you, Will?
Yeah. So for me, the in terms of making stuff lately, I've gotten back into painting, actually.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome.
Yeah, which has been fun. So my undergraduate degree was actually in painting. And, you know, it can be hard in D.C. to paint, because I like to paint big, and every space here is small
and expensive
and
restrictive.
Yeah. So
what do you mean?
I mean, in terms of having space to work and space to store the things that you make. DC can be hard, because you know, everyone basically lives in a closet. So it's been challenging. Painting smaller changes the kind of, for me, is changing the way I'm thinking about the paintings I'm working on, and it's changing the experience.
Has it changed what you're painting?
Like,
I mean, are you painting a smaller version of stuff that you would have done big, or is it completely different?
So what I'm trying to do is to take the things that I previously was painting and make them more complex, more mature. So I feel like I'm painting the same stuff, but I'm trying to paint them in a more sophisticated kind of way, which is challenging for me since it's a smaller canvas. I don't know. It's just changing the experience, and it's difficult and challenging in its own way. So I don't know yet if I like what I'm making, but I'm trying it out, and that's been fun. Then
you've been doing screenings, haven't you?
Yeah, I've been doing a lot of screenings lately. That's been, as far as filmmaking, that's where most of my energy's been going, towards getting my documentary Trash Empire screened around. So last weekend, the weekend before last, I screened in Philadelphia. That was a really good screening at Drexel University. Tomorrow night, there's actually a screening at the Arlington Drafthouse and Cinema, or the Arlington Cinema and Drafthouse. Yeah. I always get confused about the name. Yeah. So that's screening tomorrow through Women in Film and Video, which is a really cool organization in town. And it's been cool plugging into that community, and it's awesome that they're giving me this opportunity to screen it.
How'd you get hooked up with them?
I just became a member. I just became a member and started going to events. They have all sorts of amazing trainings that you can attend as a member, and then they have like meet and greets. So at one of the meet and greets, the director of it suggested that I should, you know, submit to have my film screened, and, you know, made no promises because obviously she hadn't seen the film. So, you know, I feel like I experience it, and maybe you guys do too, as well as artists, you know, experience like imposter syndrome, feeling like, you know, your art is not worthy and always sort of wondering when somebody gives you an opportunity, you know, is it because they actually like it or, you know,
when are they going to find out?
Yeah. When are they going to find out that you're not actually an artist or something, yeah. You know, all this sort of destructive ways of thinking about yourself. Yeah. So that's something that, you know, I'm working on is, you know, trying to take praise and take it seriously. You know, we were talking on the way here, you know, after a lot of screenings, I've seen my film so many times that I just see the problems now. Yeah. And I don't see the good things anymore. So after a screening, it's cool to talk to people who, you know, were impacted in a deep and positive way and are really excited about what they just saw. So
that's so difficult as an artist.
Yeah.
I think everybody, you know, struggles with that of, you know, what am I doing here?
Yeah.
Even if you look back at your album or your song or your film or whatever, and you're like, you know, that was actually good. I only get that once in a while where I'm like, oh, that was good. Every other time.
It's weird. Like, yeah. Cause you can have a different experience with the same work of art that you made.
Sure.
Depending on your attitude that you bring at any given moment.
Yep. What about you, Bumi? What have you been working on?
Well, let's see. So one thing that I've been doing is I've been listening to a lot of podcasts that deal with film. And so one of the podcasts that I listen to deals with the psychological aspects of filmmaking. And I think the first episode was dealing with procrastination.
Mm.
And so I was like, okay, I'm going to stop procrastinating. Like Casey and I will have, you know, we would have these conversations and we would talk about all like what we're going to do, but I never started doing it. And so I started getting back into the research because my film is a historical documentary about my family. So it's very personal for me. So I got back into it heavily, you know, researching. And Casey and I even went out to do a shoot. And then something personal happened to me that kind of set me back a little bit once I got started. And so I can't really talk about it, but I was also neglecting myself. And so this incident that happened to me showed me that it's also important as a filmmaker or just in general to take care of yourself first.
Definitely.
You know, you keep running around. Okay, I'm going to do this. I'm going to do this, blah, blah, blah. But you neglect yourself and then something happens to kind of slow you down to say, hey, you need to look at you first. So I learned that. That was one thing. Two, I've been working with Anthony Browder, who's a cultural memory specialist. I've been working with him for the past, where are we now, 2019. So in 2010, I began going with him to Egypt to work on at a site, 25th Dynasty Temple Tombs on the South Ossetif, in South Ossetif, Luxor, Egypt, which is on the west bank of Luxor. Where the Valley of the Kings, Valley of the Queens are, where everyone is, all the noblemen are buried.
Mm-hmm.
And so the project that we're working on focuses on the 25th Dynasty. Three sites that we're working at, Karakamun, who was a priest, Kara Baskin, who was the mayor of Waset at the time, which is what the place, what Luxor was called. And Itieru, who's a 26, I forget exactly what her position or her role was, but she was 26th Dynasty. So we're in the process, well, the Asa Restoration Project, which I've been volunteering under, and the South Ossetif Conservation Project, who's in charge of the entire project. And the South Ossetif. South Ossetif Conservation Project is the project that oversees everything that we're working on. And the ASA Restoration Project, which is what Anthony Browder started, funds and supports the work of the South Ossetif Conservation Project. So this year the project is in the final phase of restoring the temple tomb of Karakamun. and so that it can open in the future for everybody to, you know, come and look at. So this year, this summer, artifacts that were found at the site went into the Luxor Museum. So I got my first job. I did social media, and I was in charge of doing video and photography alongside another filmmaker, Chris Reiser, who's done a documentary called Out of Darkness. So I was working alongside a filmmaker and learning, because I'm a novice. And I also got to be present at the opening of this, of all the artifacts at the Luxor Museum, of everything that was found at the site at the Luxor Museum. So there was like a big grand, there's a grand opening with the general, the director of antiquities of Egypt at the museum. So I got to be there. I was taking photos. I was doing video.
Oh, so this is the gig that you were hired for. Yeah, this was your first basically professional gig.
Right.
That's huge.
First professional gig. So I'm super nervous. There are people there from all around the world. I would say that our group was probably, we were definitely the only African Americans there, and there weren't too many Americans there. There were people from Spain, of definitely people from Egypt and, you know, other parts of Europe that were there at this opening. So I'm like super nervous. So there was a grand dinner at Luxor Temple, like on the grounds of Luxor Temple. So when Tony goes up, Anthony Browder goes up to make a speech, I forget to hit record. I was like, oh man, I totally messed up. And I had put so much pressure on myself. I was trying to be so perfect. Luckily, Tony's daughter was there and Chris, the filmmaker, was there. So between the three of us, everybody was able to capture images from different angles. But I felt so much pressure, like, oh my God, this is my primary job. So I go back and I'm like, oh man, I messed up. I forgot to press record. And then what do? I started crying. Like, I was like, oh man, I messed up. And so
I can feel the pain.
Yeah. So I totally get that fear.
Chris was like, oh, I do it all the time. And I'm like, what? You do it all the time. Like, you mess up. He was like, yeah, I've done that a lot. I forgot to press record. So I learned, you know, everybody, you know, that's just something that happens, you know, as a filmmaker, you're going to make mistakes. And also we went to a temple of Seti the First, and you can see the architects of the temple, like the sketches on the wall that they were doing. You can see the errors that they made. And so Tony had pointed that out. He was like, look, like, you can see where their drawings are like incorrect and where they would go back and correct them. So even these people who created these monuments, and we think, oh, they're so perfect, how did they do it?
Yeah, if they made mistakes, then
you know, they made mistakes too. So I go back I learned that. So I learned about the procrastination aspect. I learned about procrastinating first, taking care of myself first. Stop procrastinating on taking care of myself. And then also, take care of yourself first, and then you can work on your project. Because once you take care of yourself, you're able to go and, you know, do all these things. And then two,
oh, that's how you're supposed to do it. I've been doing it wrong.
What?
I've been working on my project in order to make myself feel better, but it doesn't really work.
I mean,
for
me, that was my lesson.
Yeah.
That was my lesson. And then two, that you're going to make mistakes. And I think a lot of people, we talked about this beforehand, how people are afraid to make mistakes. And a lot of people who come into the lab and then in the library in general, when we're helping patrons on the computer, they're afraid to touch the computer, and they're asking for our help. And we're like, watch this, you know, this is how you do it. And then they're calling us back two and three times. Whereas you see babies, they'll come in and then they'll jump on the computer and you'll try to help. No, I don't need it. Okay, goodbye. Like, I don't need you anymore. So there's something that happens when you're a child, then when you're an adult, where you're like,
you're self-conscious.
Yeah.
Self-conscious as a kid.
To just even add on to that fear, another thing about it, like the example of patrons on the computer needing our help, which don't get us wrong, we're there to help you, you know, as we can, obviously. But sometimes patrons will say, hey, I'm having trouble with X, Y, or Z. Do I just need to do X? And we're like, yeah, that's all you need to do. Like, people often already know what they're supposed to do in order to fix it, but they're so intimidated by, you know, the technology or, you know, just
they don't
want
to be outed as someone who's made a mistake.
Yeah, exactly.
And I mean,
and it's the same thing with shooting. Like,
yes, definitely.
I was thinking so much, I don't want to make a mistake. I mean, even in like framing some of the live videos that I shot, I went back and I was like, dang, I should have came in closer. Like, I should have got a tighter shot. And I didn't, you know, I was just going with it. But I learned, though.
Yeah.
I was just doing it. And then I was like, oh, okay, now I'm looking at it. I can see, oh, I should have came in closer. So it taught me to go back. I wasn't afraid to mess up this time.
Yeah.
Like, I messed up that other time, but in these instances, I wasn't afraid to, you know.
Well, and it's interesting that that's your example. I'm not saying that this is why you shot the video the way you did, but I know sometimes in the past I've shot, you know, too far back from my subject and didn't get closer because I was afraid that I was going to miss something else in the scene that would wind up being important, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So when we get in really close in an interview, you know, we're making a decision that everything else is not important and we can't get it back, you know, after we record it. That can be scary. And, you know, that fear left unchecked can become a debilitating thing that hampers our creativity. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. And that kind of ties into, we were also discussing films earlier, so I want to check in and see what films that we saw this past year, this summer. And I know, Casey, you and I both saw a couple of films that dealt with fear. It was a psychological fear. So talk about that, what we were kind of discussing earlier.
Well, we were talking about It. Mm-hmm. And first of all, we're not saying that it's the best movie or either of them, number one or number two, or even the original TV series. But
which I have to see that one now because I need to compare the two.
Yeah, but
three.
So I've read the book a bunch of times also. And, you know, the idea of, everybody remembers the clown. Everybody remembers the stuff that scares you first. But the fact that a movie like that could actually be about something else, like, you know, the A story of that movie is the kids and the clown and escaping the town, whatever. The B story is shedding your fear so that you can become an adult and grow up. And, you know, when I first started the book, I was thinking, this is a horror story. And then it's over. But actually, it has so much other stuff in there. And that, you know, as we were coming here today, we were talking about fear. And when you're making a film or going to see a film, you know, you use universal fears in there to tell your story and to draw people in. Because if it's a story about, you know, someone going into the dark, then we all have, you know, we're all drawn into that because we all have those similar fears. And that movie, I've never understood people being afraid of clowns, but that's just because I don't have that phobia. But, you know, I thought it was at the very least interesting enough to start people talking because people did talk about that movie, you know.
So It One came out like, what, 2 years ago, and Part Two came out earlier, like September.
Yeah.
So I took away something away from it, a little different.
Okay.
So I looked at it as people have these fears, right? And they keep you from doing certain things. Fear can only be counteracted by love, right? So the only way it could be anything, was able to affect the children and then as adults was if they were afraid. So the only way that you can go through something is to have love and go through, because you don't know, you know, what's going to happen. Like if somebody keeps bullying you or intimidating you, you develop a phobia of that person or whatever it is. But if you continue to go through because you don't know what the end result is and you have that love, then you can overcome that.
Yeah.
Is that the same as courage? Like,
you don't courage know? And love is on the same vibrational level to me.
Yeah, because some of those
fear
words...
is like a lower level vibration. So, and a lot of people, and I think even now, like in the media or whatever you see on television, they play on people's fears to keep them at a certain level. And
it works.
Yeah. And a lot of the stuff that is out there is negative, right? It's not of a higher vibration. So you're stuck in this fear. And I don't want to get too political and talk about everything that's going on, but there's a lot of stuff out there that keeps people afraid.
Right.
People like my mother, but anyway.
something, this is, you just totally reminded me of something I saw a couple months ago with your talk about love and fear. I saw Free Solo, which is a documentary about a guy scaling this crazy high cliff. And it's interesting because the subject of the documentary actually starts to develop greater fear of this climb because he's met a woman who he thinks is the one. And
it sounds like The Alchemist.
Yeah. I mean,
now he has something to lose.
Yeah, he had something to lose. So in some crazy way, in that instance, his love for this woman made him more afraid of this climb that he felt like he needed to do. I'm not saying that like that undoes what you're saying, but it's just interesting. I mean, what are you thinking, Casey? You look like you got something on your mind.
That movie. So I saw all the movies that Jimmy Chin has made, and you know, he did the one with Krakauer, the interview where he and what the heck was that? It was when they were going up K2, was it? I'll remember it. It was actually a different mountain. But, yeah, the idea that this guy, Alex Honnold, has parts of his brain that aren't working really correctly. That
for fear.
Yeah, like the fear center isn't necessarily working correctly. So he doesn't have that thing holding him back. So he's the one dude who's... not necessarily he's the only dude good enough, but he's the only dude who wasn't restricted by fear. And then he was like pure, he was in the pure zone and he just went up the whole thing. There was no pressure because, I mean, but like you're saying, the only pressure was, wait a second, now it matters if I fall.
Yeah. And it was really interesting because as it starts to matter, not to give away the too much about the documentary.
He falls and dies.
He does fall early on in a practice run and get pretty seriously injured. And it seemed like it was a buildup of the pressure of knowing that this is a big climb. And yeah, I don't necessarily feel afraid, but if I were to fall and die, you know, it's going to impact this other person in a big way. Have you seen this one?
I have no. No.
Oh, okay.
I don't even know what you're talking about.
Well, I mean, I didn't see it, so.
Oh, yeah, I saw it.
But I mean, the universal thing is fear.
Yeah, fear is so universal.
Do you remember in Donnie Darko where Pat...
Nope, okay. Didn't see that one.
I saw that one.
Where there was a motivational speaker who came to the school, and he taught everybody about the spectrum.
Oh,
and the
right.
The spectrum was on one side fear, and all the way to the other side was
and
love.
Didn't Donnie get really pissed off about this?
He did, yeah. He wigged out on Patrick Swayze and sent to the principal's office.
Wait, so Donnie Darko is a metaphor for what, darkness?
No, Donnie Darko is like a... It was a... I don't even know how to explain it. It was like a teen...
Yeah.
Like dark... brooding type of movie.
Yeah,
where this
yeah, but
guy,
what was the message in the story?
It was
maybe that was the message.
I think he took issue with the idea of putting fear and love on total polar opposites.
Yeah, he said
and
things
then
are
saying
not that
everything
simple.
Is in a spectrum. He seemed to think there was maybe other factors, or that maybe you know, making them polar opposites isn't even true to what fear and love necessarily are. I mean, I don't know.
I mean, it's not necessarily, if you look at it, there's light and there's dark.
Yeah.
There's cold and there's wet. There's like yin and yang. So they go together. It's just, it's, what's the word for it? Gosh, I can't think of that word right now, but they go together.
Yeah.
It's like which side do you choose to feed into?
Well, you know, when we're talking about being artistic and self-doubt and all that kind of stuff, I think I came to a realization this year, which is so simple. Most people probably already do that, but that I realized that I'm not necessarily, maybe smart isn't the right word, but I'm not necessarily smart enough to get every movie that I see. So I'll go to movies that I'm supposed to like, and then I'm supposed to understand, like Quentin Tarantino's movie this year, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, and I'm watching it thinking, I've got to understand what's so great about this, because clearly it's going to be great. And I watched it once, and any movie that I'm interested in, I watch at least twice in the theater, if not more. And it's not because I'm dedicated to film. It's because I don't understand things the first time. And I've realized that I'm finally smart enough to know that I'm not smart enough to get every film. Like, there are more abstract films that I saw this year. Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, that's a good example. I saw it three times in the theater. The first time, it was just in awe of how it looked, and the cinematography was beautiful. Everything was beautiful. Then the second time was filling in all the gaps of the story that I missed. And then the third time is, what am I missing? And it's always those three things. Because the third one is like, I don't even know if I like this movie. But everyone is talking about it, so I should like it. And I go back, and you don't always have to like stuff that other people like. And it's a little bit scary to admit that you don't understand. Mm. Mm-hmm. Because then you're like, I'm the idiot. I'm the one person here who doesn't get it. But it all comes back to that same thing with self-doubt and the creative process. It's like, you don't have to be perfect at everything.
And I think that ties into folks coming into the studio lab. Mm-hmm. Because while we're in there, we'll see
it
people walking by, and they say, oh, I just noticed this. And what are you doing here? Oh, I've always wanted to do this, or I want to do that. And they've never done it. And a lot of people, and the people who actually do walk through the door, some people, when they know what they know the app or whatever they're working on or whatever, they just go right to it. But the folks who don't know what they're doing, they ask a lot of questions, and they're like almost intimidated to even get started.
And those are the people that are brave enough to walk in the door.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because there's a lot of people who just look and say, I'm not good enough to do that.
Yeah, and I think that's why this space is great. And I know there are other spaces like this and other systems.
Do you want to talk about how it works?
Well, I mean, yeah. So basically, we have drop-ins Mondays and Thursdays, 1 until 5. You can sign up by going to the library's website, dclibrary.org, and you go in under the labs, and then once you go to the labs, you go to the studio lab, and then there's a link for you to go and click on that, and you can sign up for one of the drop-ins.
But we are basically hooked up with microphones and cameras and software, and I mean, a lot of people are coming in to work on podcasts lately, but there are a lot of people who are also filming, and most people are just editing stuff that they've worked on.
Filming also in music.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. Exactly. Music production. So people who want to come in and make a beat can do that. If people want to come in and interview their grandfather about something, they can do that. But
the key thing, though, from what I wanted to say, the takeaway from what we were talking about, the top things we were talking about are fear and procrastination. And coming in, this is a no pressure space. It's a free space. You come in, the libraries are all about learning. So coming into this space, there's no pressure. If you need assistance, email us studio.lab@dc.gov. And you know, share with us what you want to work on and what areas you're weak at, and we are there to assist. And I do want to emphasize, because there are a lot of people who come into the space and they think that the drop-ins are classes. They are not classes. If there's something specific that you want to work on, email studio.lab@dc.gov so that we will know what you're working on, so that one of us who is really good at whatever it is can assist you. Because I think some of us are stronger in some areas than others.
You know, and something else I wanted to mention, kind of a mindful sort of thing about the way we talk. You were mentioning how, you know, patrons will walk into the studio lab wanting to know more, and they'll preface it by saying, I just wanted to know more about this space. That's something that I'm trying to avoid, and, you know, I would encourage our listeners to, like...
Which part of it?
Just. It, like apologizing small. For my existence, yeah. Or my needing help. Like, we're obviously here to help you. I think all of us started working here because we like helping other people.
Well, we like the media,
yeah,
that we're working in, and we're also capable of.
Definitely.
You have those moments where you can help somebody who really needs it, and that means a lot.
Yeah.
And even I, like, Will said something to me one time. We were helping this woman. She came in recently to shoot a video. And I have a tendency to say, well, Will went to film school. And I was helping her set up the camera and, you know, all this other stuff. And then Will was like, well, Boomy, you know this stuff too. And I'm basically helping her set it up, you know,
totally.
Doing all the basic stuff. And so I say this to say, and I'm talking to myself too,
yeah.
That when you, that negative self-talk, you know so much, you know more than the other person in the first, just taking that first step,
mm-hmm.
is important.
You know, and you know, my film degree, like, is its own thing, whatever. It's just a label, you know what I mean? My experiences in film school aren't the same as your experiences out in the field in Egypt. And your experiences there in Egypt are just as valuable, if not more valuable, you know? So I think when we get hung up on, well, I studied this or I experienced that, therefore I'm more valid or whatever, like, it's just kind of a bunch of nonsense.
And, yeah. And libraries are places to learn.
Yeah.
So that's the thing. And I think that's the point to get across, is don't procrastinate. Don't have fear. Come into a space where the space is all about learning.
And making mistakes.
Yeah. Just, even if you just want to come in and you don't know anything about Premiere and you just want to throw some pictures on and start editing, come into the space. There's... You know, nobody's looking at you. Everybody who comes in, they're doing their own thing and they're focused on that. And there are folks who come in who work on various projects, I mean, across the spectrum. And they learn. Some of them came in and just started playing around and got good at it. And
yeah.
Almost everyone that I've asked, I was like, oh, well, how did you learn how to edit? Oh, I just, you know, I was doing this and I started playing around. And then they got it. You know, just... taking that step. So,
or they did what I did, which was you just learn it because you have to.
Yeah.
Because you're like, oh, I have to learn, I have to get these song, mm-hmm. I have to get this,
yeah.
song mixed
for their project,
but I don't know how,
yeah.
to mix. So, you know, what are they, what is it, the mother of invention, necessity is the mother of invention. So you need to figure out how to edit this project, and you don't have an option not to.
Yeah.
Then suddenly, oh, I just learned it, and it really gives you some confidence in your own abilities.
Yeah. And you know what? Honestly, in film school, I had a class where we learned to use After Effects and a class where we learned to use Photoshop. I had absolutely zero classes where we learned how to edit. That was all just, you know, we went out and shot and then we were expected to figure out how to put it together.
Wow,
so we had,
crazy.
Yeah, it is crazy. So we had professors or whatever to give us feedback and say, hey, you know, you did a really bad job, or hey, you did a really good job. So you get that kind of feedback. But as far as learning the software, we just did that on our own. So
I'm so surprised to hear
that.
Yeah.
So when you hear somebody say, oh, I went to film school, you know, like, sure, that's good or whatever, but it doesn't necessarily mean that they had access to something that you don't have access to. They may have just learned on YouTube or through Lynda, yeah, which you can access
Lynda
with your library card. Through the research tab.
Research databases.
The research databases on the DC Library website. So,
I mean, I was on there twice this week. And then go to learning.
Yes.
Yeah.
Click on learning.
Well, I mean, so what stuff have you guys... Brumi and I together, when we were down at MLK, watched... was it the documentary film, intro to documentary film?
On Lynda, yeah.
Yeah. Man, that stuff is good. I cannot believe it's free.
Well, I mean, we're paying for it with our taxes, right? Let's be honest.
So, guys, this has definitely been... Oh, I remember what I was going to say about fear and fear and the other thing. Fear and
love?
And love. I'm sorry.
That's funny. That other thing.
Fear and love is they're complements to each other. They're not opposites. They're complements.
Mm, interesting. So see, that's good.
Like red and green.
We have black and white.
Yeah.
Do you guys have anything you want to say before we wrap up?
I think we're all excited about 2020.
Yeah.
And Martin Luther King Library reopening. There's a lot of details to be known. Mm-hmm. But
you can go to the website and kind of look at the updates.
Yeah. And they're doing like a time lapse of the construction on there too.
Is that camera, the live camera, is that still going? Does anyone know?
I think so.
Cool.
Yeah, I know they just released a video with them, a time lapse video. Yeah, and the space for the labs in general, including the Fab Lab, it's going to be expansive, way more space.
It's impressive.
Yeah. Yep.
Cool.
Okay. Well,
thanks for having us.
Sure. Anytime. You guys are great guests. Feel free to stop by anytime.
Cool.
Good luck in your future. This has been an episode of DCPLs from the studio on Full Service Radio, broadcasting live from the Lion Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. Please visit dclibrary.org to learn more about the library's services and programs. Talk to us online at DCPL on Twitter and at DC Public Library on Instagram. Listen and download the show wherever you listen to your podcast by searching for Full Service Radio. Thank you, listeners.
Peace.
Thanks for listening to this program on Full Service Radio, broadcasting and recording from the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. Full Service Radio programming can be accessed live and archived on fullserviceradio.org. Our talk programming is available on most podcast apps like iTunes and Stitcher, and our DJ sets are available on mixcloud.com/fullserviceradio. Full Service Radio features over 30 weekly shows and over 50 local hosts covering every topic imaginable. If you want to be a guest or get involved, email us at info@fullserviceradio.org. Follow us on Twitter @FullServiceRDO, on Instagram and Facebook @FullServiceRadio. Thanks for listening.